I'm Taylor Stafford, and this is Talk Taboo.
Yeah! Come on over!
We ask a lot of people if they like their asshole touch.
We really are breaking down stigmas.
It's everything sex. Okay, welcome to Talk Taboo on our off week, off day. Off week, but we're doing it anyways. Oh my God, hold on, I have to sneeze. Oh, maybe. Okay. Yikes, now that we got that off our nose. So you guys wrote in questions about abortion. Some of them were answered last week on the episode with Shakia, but I really wanted to make sure that we got your questions answered about abortion, but also that we got accurate information out there for people that really are using this as an education podcast, you know, because that's originally what it was supposed to be for. And now we just destigmatize and sometimes educate. So here's the education portion. Haha. So we're not going to do like a full episode today. I'm not going to do open a book. I'm not going to do healing human, all of the things. Because it's just a Q&A. I want to get all the facts out there in a timely manner. Thank you for everyone who did write in questions. A lot of people are having the same questions. So that tells me that, what is it? Like, you know when you like raise your hand in class and they're like, most likely someone has the same question that you have. So raise your hand. That's how I felt about this. So before I go over any of these questions, I'm going to go over the different types of abortions. I'm going to try and do this in a fairly fast manner, and I'm also going to put up online websites that explain it more thoroughly. That way, if you guys do have questions, you know where to go find the answers. So I'm going to talk about the first way. So it's methotrexate. And misoprostol, I think I said that right. Probably didn't though. So this is done up to 7 weeks. This is one of the ways. So methotrexate is actually a cancer drug, which stops cells from multiplying. So as we know in cancer, your cells start like rapidly dividing and making new cells, and it gets out of hand. And so this drug stops cells from multiplying. The same kind of similar kind of cell regeneration, multiplying, making new cells, blah, 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 happens in I was going to say fetus, but it really is like an embryo, right? Fertilized egg, implanted, it's now starting to divide and start making a fetus. So this method, that's what the methotrexate does. The misoprostol, I don't even know if I'm fucking saying that right, but they call it MTX. So MTX is the drug that they give that contracts the uterus to release like its contents. So like any of like the embryo that's already in there or the lining of the uterus as well. So this is rarely used for planned abortions. This is mostly used for ectopic pregnancies. And what an ectopic pregnancy is when the embryo implants in the fallopian tube. So those of people that aren't aware, the fallopian tube is what connects the ovary to the uterus. So it's basically like the little like pathway that the egg goes before it gets into the uterus where it's supposed to implant. If it implants in the fallopian tube, it's actually really, really dangerous and really life-threatening. The baby will implant there and it will start growing. And the fallopian tube is not made at the same, like with the same tissue that the uterus is made. So basically what the fallopian tube, it will do is it will rupture. And this can cause the mom to bleed out internally. Embryos that are implanted in the fallopian tubes do not survive. And it can be super dangerous. So if that fallopian tube ruptures, they usually have to go in, do surgery, and they take that whole fallopian tube out. So the mother loses that fallopian tube. It makes it a little bit harder to get pregnant in the future because you only have one other fallopian tube. But some people can have no fertility issues at all. They'll just start releasing their eggs from the opposite fallopian tube. So that one is not something like people really go to like an abortion clinic and say like, I want the methotrexate MTX. That's usually for ectopic pregnancies. Okay. So the medical abortion, this one takes up to 10 weeks. It's two pills. So mifepristone, LOL, and mifeprex. Basically, it blocks progesterone, which is needed for implantation and growth of that embryo. Usually, it is given in the office. So you take the misoprostol. It's called Cytotec. I'm going to call it Cytotec. The Cytotec is what you take home with you. So the mifepristone you take in the office, and then the Cytotec is what you take home with you. So you, yeah, you take one pill there, then you take it home, take the other one. And that one that you take home with you, you can either take it by mouth or you can do like an insertion into the vagina. Basically, this contracts the uterus and pushes out any of the contents of the pregnancy. You usually start to cramp and bleed pretty heavily, but depending on how far along you are in your pregnancy, which Shakia and I talked about, but it, you know, you bleed heavily 1 to 4 hours after taking that second pill. Side effects of that pill are small blood clots, nausea, vomiting, tiredness, headache, sweating, dizziness. And most people pass the pregnancy within 4 to 5 hours after taking the pills. But it can take up to 2 days. So, but again, depends on how far along the pregnancy is. After taking that method of the abortion, after doing the whole medical abortion, which is what that whole process is called, your period usually starts between 4 to 6 weeks after that, and then ovulation can start within 3 weeks after as well. You're supposed to wait 1 to 2 weeks after to have sex. But what's great about any of these birth control methods is it does not affect your ability to get pregnant in the future, which is really, really, really great. I saw online that this one costs anywhere between $300 and $800. Obviously, we talked to Shakia, and that was not the case. It was more expensive. I'm sure the rates of, like, the cost, obviously, like, what Shakia was talking about, it matters if you have insurance, how much you make, because they can do sliding scales. Obviously, state to state is going to be different. Organization to organization is going to be different. If it's a private organization, if it's a statewide or federal organization, all of those things are going to change and affect how much that's going to cost. Okay, so vacuum aspiration, this is the one that Shakia did. So you can do this one up to 16 weeks. It's done in a medical abortion clinic, and you can also do this one if a medical abortion fails. So if you take the pills and it didn't work for some reason, then you can do this. But basically what it is it gently suctions and pulls out like the placenta, whether that is a fetus or an embryo at that time. It kind of pulls that out. It's usually not painful, but you can have cramping in your uterus. I feel like any of this, you can have cramping because obviously you're like irritating the uterus or like, you know, adding hormones and things to it. So that's just like a natural body reaction. The procedure lasts usually between like 5 to 10 minutes. Like Shakia said, she was like out for like 10 minutes total and then like woke up and was like, what the fuck? Symptoms can be bleeding, spotting, cramps, nausea, sweating, dizziness. And then you want to avoid sex for like a week after the procedure. Your period should return to between 4 to 6 weeks and does not affect your ability to get pregnant in the future. Again, with the cost, I saw online $600 to $1,000, but like as Shakia shared in her episode, that is not what happened. Hers was a lot more expensive, so it is going to change based on all those factors that I listed before. Okay, so dilation and evacuation. So you can do this after 14 weeks, which is the second trimester. It can be used if The other abortion pills, like, didn't work. Some people have, like, medical issues that they need this way instead of, like, if you have, like, any contraindications with the other medication, then you can do this way as well. Uses a vacuum to suck out all those contents, which we talked about. So the first day, the doctor, like, dilates the cervix, which makes it easier to remove the pregnancy tissue. And then the second day, they use forceps to go out and, like, remove the fetus and the placenta. And then they, like, use a tube thing to, like, suction out all the other, like, contents of the uterus. And then they can use this little scoop thing that's, like, I think of it like a little ice cream scooper. And it just, like, scoops out all the other, like, uterine lining and things that are in there. It can be painful, but you can have any kind of, like, numbing procedures. And now that, like, we know that Shakia got anesthesia, I'm wondering if they will do anesthesia for this procedure as well. But, yeah, so symptoms of it can be bleeding, cramping, nausea, and these can last up to 2 weeks after the procedure. You want to avoid heavy exercise, and then your period starts between 4 and 8 weeks after the procedure. And then you're supposed to, like, wait a little bit after this one's done to, like, conceive another baby, if that's what you're trying to do. And the doctor will help you, like, determine, when it's safe for you to get pregnant again. Okay. So this next one is rarely used in the US. Rarely. It is called the induction slash induced abortion. It is done between 13 and 27 weeks. It's a good option if you're past the 24 weeks and so you can't get a dilation and an evacuation. Hence, it's really used in the US because many of our abortion laws don't let you get an abortion after 24 weeks. But basically, they, like, give you a sedative, and it's, like, very similar to the other one where they, like, go in, they give you medicine to, like, contract your uterus to release the pregnancy contents, and then go in there and kind of, like, scoop all the things out. This one is more about, like, they would use this one more in situations where it has gone on for a certain amount of time, the pregnancy, and it is so dangerous to either the mom or the fetus, so you're kind of, like, inducing labor. And so obviously side effects are going to be like pain, bleeding, cramping, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, chills, headache, and you have to avoid sex 2 to 6 weeks after, and your period comes about 2 months after. So yeah, we don't use those ones too much in America. And if they do, it's more of like because like it's super dangerous or like the fetus is already dead in there from whatever the reason may be. Like the pregnancy has failed. Okay, so that's just like to give you guys a little bit of a rundown of like what abortions are out there, whether that means they're available where you are or, you know, whatever. Those are the options. Okay, so let's start with are abortions painful? They can be painful. As Shakia said, she was under anesthesia. So hers did not end up being painful, but I have heard, and you know, through the research that I did do, they can be painful sometimes, especially if you're further in your pregnancy, and you're going to start bleeding a lot more. Your body has a lot more to kind of extract and, just has a lot more of, what is it called? Like, going back to homeostasis, your body has a lot of shit to do, okay? It has a lot of hormones that it needs to change. So, yes, it's going to be uncomfortable maybe. All the things. It can be painful. Especially if you have, like, any complications or anything like that. Can definitely be painful. Okay. I just want to say this abortion fact, because I think it's important that most abortions in the US are done within the first trimester. So that's like within the first like 12-ish to 13 weeks. And some states allow end of second trimester, which is 24 weeks. Third trimester in the US can only be done if the mother or baby's life is in danger. And basically what happens in like the third trimester is they just induce pregnancy, or they induce labor. So they're gonna give you some Pitocin, some other hormones, things to make you actually go into labor. So most, you know, people are, one of the questions, the reason I'm putting that information out there is because I think there's a lot of people who think that abortions are just like, people are just doing them all the time in any kind of trimester, and legally that is not able. Now, are there going to be people who are inducing an abortion in an unhealthy way, or in a way that has not been legalized? Yes, absolutely. That happens all the time in any stages. And yeah, I had a question. This one's really interesting. So it says, what's the status on aborted fetuses for stem cell research? And I thought I knew the answer to this, but I looked it up just to make sure I did. So fetuses are not used for stem cell research. That gets misconstrued. So, and what the whole embryonic stem cell research is basically they take an egg and a sperm in a petri dish, implant it so that it is a embryo, and then they use that embryo to inject into whatever they're trying to do with their stem cell research is. So I have seen a lot of stem cell research about like these embryo cells being injected into spines and people who are paralyzed from whatever, you know, whether that be like a quadriplegic or a paraplegic, they're injected into the somewhere in the spine, in the spinal fluid, and it actually regenerates the cells that like help you walk. The way that works is because the cells don't have like, we call them like differentiated. So they don't have a specific purpose yet. So like our hair cells, for instance, like those are specifically made to make hair. Our fingernails are specifically made to make fingernails. Our heart cells are specifically made for our heart function and all the things. And so that's what it's doing when like you have an embryo and it's like making a baby, is it's dividing, and all these cells are getting more specific. So when they're not specific yet, when they are still in that little embryo, we can make like in a lab what these cells are going to specify so that they can help things like cancer or paraplegics or whatever. So the misconception is like they're not taking an embryo that's already implanted in a uterus out of the uterus, or they're not taking like a fetus out of the uterus and like making them into stem cells. These are like actually things that are like happening in a dish. They're not extracting it from people's body, if that makes sense. So like if you get like an abortion, they're not like, okay, we're gonna like use this 12-month-old baby, or sorry, 12-month, yikes, we're not gonna use this 12-week-old fetus to make stem cells and conduct stem cell research. That's not what's happening. So yes, because stem cells, so the embryos that they're actually using, the ones that are like helpful for like any stem cell research, it's within 4 days. So it's about 4 days. So like if you're pregnant for more than 4 days, then it's pretty much useless for stem cell research. Or I think it's 6 days, 4 days, whatever. It's days. Like people don't even know they're pregnant at that time. So maybe people are like taking the stem cells within a couple days and extracting it for stem cell research. But it's just like not effective because people don't know that they're pregnant in that time. So no, if you're like getting an abortion and you're past 6 days or whatever, then they're not using it for stem cell research because it's pointless, because too many cells are already specified and differentiated. Okay. So someone asked like, what percent of people have long-term physical consequences from abortions and what are they? So most abortions these days in 2021 are they do not affect your ability to get pregnant in the future. So they talked about like sterilization. So like you can't get pregnant anymore and like it affects your body's ability to actually get pregnant. So the main abortions that they're talking about with that is the fallopian tube and like the ectopic pregnancies. So anything that kind of goes wrong already in the pregnancy, that's really going to affect your ability to get pregnant in the future. But the abortion methods that we have these days, very, 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 very low percentage affect your ability to get pregnant in the future. Yeah. So hopefully that answers that question. This is an interesting one. So at what point is abortion killing a human life? It's such a loaded question. Everyone's opinion is different. Some of the opinions out there are, well, we say that like when your heart stops, that means that you're dead. So when the baby's heart starts, does that mean that it's alive? Now, some people think that. I will just say that just because your heart stops doesn't mean that you're dead, actually. these days, you know, there's different types of basically like cause of death. So you can be death by neuro, like neuro issues of why you're died, or you can do death by like cardiac death or like neural death. So if someone is like, if their heart is like still beating, but they're literally a vegetable, they have like 0% brain function, or maybe like the brain stem is still working. So the brain stem is like that really lower part of your brain that controls like your heart rate and blood pressure and things like that. So like you can literally have like almost 0% brain function and your heart can still be beating. Like, do we count that as someone who is dead or alive? Like, I don't know. It depends on the family, right? And their decision about like whether this means death for their loved one or it doesn't. And so even though like these conversations are happening at the beginning of life, they're also happening at the end of life. And so, yeah, so some people will be like, well, you know, if the baby's heart is beating, then that means they're alive. So that is one thing that people think. I'll give my personal opinion. And I think I might've said this on Shakia's episode, but I think that if that fetus is able to feel pain and suffering, then that's what makes that a human to me. Because I don't know, just because your heart is beating doesn't mean that you like can feel and all the things. I'm always like bouncing around, but I also want to point out that like, yes, the heart starts beating at 8 weeks in a fetus, but it doesn't mean that it can beat on its own. Like it's like beating, but like none of the chambers of the heart are even like actually like functionable. Like you still need the mom in order for like that baby to like survive. So like the heart is not actually like functionable. Like just because it's beating and like there's some blood going through it doesn't mean that like they would ever be able to like sustain life outside of the womb with that kind of heart. It's just because it's beating doesn't mean that it's actually done forming. Okay. So at 20 weeks, we know that definitely by 20 weeks, fetuses can feel pain and suffering. There is some research coming out that they might be able to start feeling pain at 12 weeks, but we know by 20 weeks, they can definitely feel pain. So that question of like, at what point is abortion killing a human life? That is the whole argument of, you know, abortions and why some people are pro-life and some people are, pro-choice. And so, yeah, that's something that everyone kind of has to figure out on their own of where they stand in that situation. I would like to challenge people who are really pro-life because, you know, they're like, I care about this unborn baby, right? This little fetus who is a child who is an important life. And, you know, these things get really, really tricky when, okay, well, what if I will just say I've had a 9-year-old pregnant before. And, you know, at age 9 and, you know, in the teen years, yes, you might have a period and you're able to conceive, but your hips actually, like, through puberty, they get wider. And they get wider so that you can fit a baby's head through the pelvis when they're, you know, during birth. And so the birth rates the death rates of teen pregnancies and child pregnancies around the world are so high. And that's because your body is not, like, it's not structured right to be able to have a child. It can't fit down the birth canal, and which makes it super, super dangerous. So then I would challenge you, okay, so you care about this unborn baby's life, but what about this 9-year-old? Like, that 9-year-old is a bebe. You know, that 9-year-old is a child in itself. And, you know, what is this going to do to their lives? And then obviously if a 9-year-old is pregnant, then it probably was not a consensual situation. Now, does it happen that 9-year-olds have sex? Yes, absolutely, in a consensual way. But most of the time, 9-year-olds don't even have a sex drive yet. You know, they might have had their period, but they don't have all those, like, hormones and things that, like, really make you want to have sex. So I would challenge of, like, these are not black and white issues. These are not black and white conversations. There is always, always, always a but what about in this situation. I could come up with so many situations right now of, like, why I'm pro-choice, but at the end of the day, it's not black or white. And I guess that's why I don't agree with, like, the pro-life movement, is because there's always circumstances that are so important that the abortion does occur. And so, yeah, that is just something that I hope people think about. I also want to talk about, like, since we're on this subject of people who are getting abortions for different reasons besides, like, sexual trauma or because they're a child or it's dangerous. People like Chiquilla, like, that just chose that this is what's going to be best for my family, best for my daughter, best for my situation. That is literally, like, I know that my field, I see different things than, like, other people see because I'm around these kids with that come from shit families. Like, not everyone with psychiatric and behavioral issues comes from a poor upbringing, but a lot of them do. And I just see the amount of kids that are in foster care that have been abused over and over and over again. And, you know, people will be like, well, do you really think, like, look at that cute little kid. Do you really think that they should have been aborted? And I know that's a really fucking hard conversation to have. And that's a really, like, intense opinion and, like, thoughts to have about someone. But I have seen so many situations, like, I'm almost, like, crying, I'm sorry. I have seen so many situations where it pains me to think that, but yes, it, when you hear the amount of shit that some of these kids have endured in their life, I would not fucking wish that on Osama bin Laden. Like, literally, no one deserves to go through the kind of pain that some of these kids have gone through. And I just, there's something to be said for a life full of suffering. And obviously, I'm not going to look at that kid and be like, I don't think you should be fucking born. Like, obviously not. Like, we're in the situation. Like, now it's time for us to, like, implement resources and services and love and get this kid everything that they deserve that they've never gotten. But this is where I really, really struggle with pro-life movements, because pro-life movements do not support single mother family households. They do not support free healthcare, which we know that a bunch of people who need healthcare are single mothers, raising children and just trying to make the best lives for their children. And so they don't support those, you know, like they don't want to be taxed. And like part of that money is going to support the babies that you thought shouldn't have been aborted. And that to me is just like the most hypocritical thing I've ever heard in my entire life is to, and I get like right now the way that like taxes are in Washington, we don't have state tax, but like the way that like taxes are, like, I want to be able to vote where my tax money goes. Yes, I don't want my tax money to go to something that I don't think that is going to be beneficial for people. But instead of just saying, like, I don't want to be taxed, let's figure out, like, how we can make our tax money support these babies and support these kids growing up. But instead, we don't put any money into healthcare for them. We, you know, Washington right now is ranked 48th in mental health across the country. And so we don't give them any resources. And instead, we judge them for being put in jail. We judge them for having behavioral issues. And they're deemed as like, just like outsiders and things that need to be fixed in society. And that really just stresses me out. And I know that people from pro-life on the other side listening to me say this probably have an argument of why that this is not legitimate to them. But you also don't see people that like, or commonly, I won't say always, but like commonly people that are voting pro-life, like, okay, well then why aren't you a foster parent? Why aren't you adopting children instead of having 17 children on your own? That was an exaggeration. I'm just saying, like, how are you helping the system help, like, nurture these babies that you said their life was so important that we couldn't end it, but now it's okay for them to suffer? That is not okay with me. And so, yeah, that was my soapbox. It makes me really hurt when they're fought for until they're 40 weeks in gestation, and the minute they're born, no one gives a fuck about them. That's, sorry, saying no one gives a fuck about them. I know pro-lifers would be like, we do care, and sorry, I don't agree. You don't care enough. Okay, I'm getting emotional. Okay, so another thing I want to talk about is, does sex education and access to contraception reduce abortion rates? This is, okay. Doing research for this podcast, I have read a lot of evidence-based that and arguments that support that access to contraception and sex education do not reduce abortion rates. Obviously, all of the things that I usually read and usually look up on support that sex education and contraception reduces abortion rates. So I wanted to see, I know about that. I want to see the other side. Why do you think that they don't? And so all of the research that I have found, and I will post this also with this episode so you can go look at it yourself. A lot of it was saying that, like, okay, so in like the 80s, we decided that we're going to do sex education. That was like from like very liberal standpoint, like we're going to do sex education in schools. And so the argument was, okay, if we're going to increase sex education in schools, then abortion rates should go down if, you know, if this argument is legitimate. And so we saw that abortion rates didn't go down. Actually, some of them went up. And so their argument is like, look, we implemented sex education. Contraception was more prevalent, like it was more accessible in the U.S. and abortion rates still went up. And yes, that is true. Now, okay. In the 80s and 90s, early 2000s even, the sex education that was approved in schools was abstinence-based education only. So in my mind, I said, you didn't prove that actual legitimate sex education that's evidence-based and accurate shows the reduction in abortion rates. You have shown that abstinence-based programs do not reduce abortion. Congratulations, we know this. The only thing that abstinence-based programs are effective at is it pushes back the first initial onset of a sexual experience, aka it makes kids have sex later. But we know that abstinence-based education once they do have sex, they're more likely to have an STI, they're more likely to have an unplanned or unwanted pregnancy, and in return, they're more likely to have an abortion. So that does not, that doesn't work for me. We know that, like, through the World Health Organization and the United Nations, that access to sex education, accurate sex education, things that are actually true about your body, and access to contraceptions does decrease abortion. And it also improves the lives of women and their kids that they've already had. I think this is comical and crazy. So I'm just going to share it. This is as of April 2019. So some things have changed from the 2020 bills that have passed. But I couldn't find anything about, like, the actual information of that anymore or yet. Okay, so I'm just doing this 2019 one. Just know that some of this has changed a little bit. So sex education is not mandatory across the U.S. And some states, not only do they supply sex education, but there's nothing that says that it has to be medically accurate, which is fucking comical. Like, we're literally we're teaching things in school that we know are not medically accurate. Like, what the fuck are you teaching them then? Like, that, this is what I was talking about with Shakia. Like, 2 + 3 = 4. Like, what the fuck? What's the point of even having it if it's, like, not even accurate? So currently 24 states have mandated that sex education be taught in public schools. Only 13 states require that the information taught be medically accurate. So we have 13 states that are like, we're gonna teach you accurate information, and the rest of the states are like, fuck it, we're not gonna teach you, or we're gonna teach you false shit. So again, with the argument of sex education does not decrease abortions, it's like, okay, great. Like, what the fuck? That's not even an argument. It's literally not even an argument when you are not even supplying accurate information to our children. God, no wonder why we're like, oh, I'm watching porn left and right. I thought that's how sex works. Like, good Lord. Okay, this is my ad for today. It's about my own shit, which is fucking funny to me. Okay, I don't want to spend extra time talking about it, so I'm gonna do an ad for it. We have beanies. They say taboo, taboo, taboo on the website. Some are gray, some are black. They're super cute. We're also getting new merch this week, but we have plain black t-shirts for men that say women against taboo. Okay, whoa, not for men. Just that's what they're called, is men's t-shirts, but other people can wear them too. Great. Or we also have other ones that are like a woman's cut that are white, our typical women against taboo t-shirts. We also have, what do we have? Stickers. Some just say woman against taboo. Some say you're holding change in your hands. Other ones say girls masturbate and I like my pussy dripping in consent. And also, that's not my clit, because we need to remind people to, like, learn about the fucking clit. So go to www.womenagainsttaboo.org and buy your merch to support all of our endeavors. Thank you. We need to do better about realizing, like, it's not abortion versus not abortion. It's literally about every single case is different. Every single pregnancy is different. Everything is always different. And every circumstances has its own challenges and has its own moral beliefs. And that's why I believe that it should be your choice, because, like, if you don't want to have an abortion, don't have an abortion. Like, I'm sorry. So, and it's, like, hard for me to speak about women who want to have abortions that, like, maybe I don't agree with the reason that they're having an abortion, and, you know, and, but that's the kind of the point, is that, like, I don't really get to decide for everyone. Everyone gets to decide for themselves. So whether I agree with why they're having an abortion or how they're having an abortion, in the circumstances, that is not my choice. It's my choice, to figure out what I think is right for myself. Wow, that was a soapbox. Sorry, that was only the rest of the questions people sent in, we really answered in Shakia's episode already, so I didn't include them in here. I wanted this to just be like a shorter episode of getting some information. Of course, if you have even more questions, I will list a bunch of sites here that have really great resources and more education on abortions. But yeah, okay. What do I say? Follow us at woman.against.taboo. I am Taylor Stafford. Both of those are Instagram. You can always send us an email at womanagainsttaboo@yahoo.com. You can, what else can they do? They can go to our website at www.womanagainsttaboo.org. And we have all of our merch there still. Please, please, please go and buy merch to support Maggie and her family, as well as the Women Against Taboo Foundation and some of our other projects that we're working on that I'm super excited about. And I hope everyone is seeing a therapist, because it's really, really, really hard times right now. So just a reminder, you can go to betterhelp.com. This is not a fucking ad, but maybe it should be. BetterHelp. I actually signed up for a therapist on BetterHelp. Not really like loving my therapist right now, so I'm trying to find another one, and I'm going to try and use the app and see how that works. So go to BetterHelp if you are having trouble finding therapists in your area, or you just would rather do therapy online. Okay, great. Thank you guys so much for always supporting, and keep sending me your questions and all of the great things. It's everything sex.